This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Ooh-ah, that magic spoon. Get on the spoon that takes me to you. I'm probably going to get sued for parodying the Who song Magic Bus, but I'm pumped about Magic Spoon. Not only pumped that they're advertising my podcast, but pumped to tell you guys about it because I love this stuff. It's delicious. I loved cereal growing up, but you can't eat that anymore. You can't have dessert first thing in the morning. Cereal later in life became a more of a dessert treat for myself. And now with Magic Spoon, I can treat myself and also not completely derail my current fitness goals. So I used to love to get all the unhealthy cereals, all the delicious cereals, whether they're frosty or cinnamony or chocolatey or fruity, I like them all, especially with a splash of little dairy. But now I can't have that stuff anymore. It'll wreck my stomach. It'll spike my insulin, this, that, the other thing. I got to cut down on carbs, sugar, unhealthy food. And I basically can't eat anything that I used to love like this. And now I find a cereal that helps me get protein in my macros that I need. It has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. 140 calories a serving. Keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. And you could build your own box. Available flavors to build your very own custom bundle are cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, and cinnamon. Peanut butter and blueberry pair together very well. Take it from me. I mean, obviously, peanut butter and cocoa pair together very well. But peanut butter and blueberry is a surprising combo that I like a lot. Go to magicspoon.com/ham to grab a custom bundle of cereal and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code HAM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's back with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/ham and use the code HAM to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Yay! What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, number one fuckboy, standing 6'2", 288 pounds, from the south shore of Nassau County, Long Island, he's John Gabriel.
All you gotta do is trust me.
Jackson, Maine. Also joining me in the Heidi Spy Studios, nearly signed co-host Arthur Gabriel. Arthur, give him a shout-out. Arthur's in the living room because wifey's home making flowers. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, first time guest, I'm pumped to talk to him. We got Vic Michaelis.
Wow, I gotta say, you warned me for the intro, and I was impressed. I still wasn't prepared for it, and I'm sitting here in awe.
Mission accomplished. That's all I want. I want to just blow my guests back, so they're like, "All right, I guess it's time to go."
Yeah. Truly,
I like to just establish the bottom for the podcast, and that way you can realize you'll never be as bad or as obnoxious as the opening to this podcast. So
absolutely. Feel comfortable. Can I give some behind the scenes magic here?
Of course.
You were worried about pronouncing my last name and you nailed it.
Yes. I mean, we did, for more behind the scenes, I did double check with you before I said it out loud. And my first guess was way off.
Way off. But you know what? I was listening carefully. I wanted to hear even like kind of like where the stress was on the syllables, and perfect. 10 out of 10. Absolutely nailed it.
And if I were to fuck it up, you would join the ranks of Mono Agapian, who's been on a dozen times, and I've said it wrong every time. And I've known him for 10 years.
Absolutely.
So it's not just my bad reading skills. I'm also rude. So don't you worry about it.
I love that.
Vic, we met doing, or maybe the last time we spoke was doing Besser's South by Southwest Improv for Human show, and you told a story about Taekwondo.
Yeah.
And that activated me as someone who also studied the way of foot and fist as a child. Not to the level at which you did, which is thrilling to me to hear anyone talk at that length about it. So the second I was banking episodes for the summer, I'm like, gotta get Vic on. I was like, hey, Dan, can you give me Vic's contact info? This is insane. I know I've met them once, but I would love for you to be able to get my info to them.
So Gabriel, I really got to say, nothing has made me happier, because it's the kind of thing, it's much much like my love of Lego. It's like the kind of thing that it's all I want to talk about. And it's the one thing that nobody wants to hear about. Like, people are so unbelievably disinterested, which I get. I absolutely do.
Preacher choir. I'm the same way with action movies. People will be having another conversation. I'll be like, yeah, did you know that on the set of Predator, Arnold, and people are like, what? And I'm like, no one wants to talk about this right now. Stop trying to inject it. So I launched a podcast to talk about action movies. And then that's what this podcast is for. So you could rant about Taekwondo. We could talk about katas. We could talk about...
Can I ask, what did you study? Were you like what form system were you on?
It was Taekwondo, Sungdo-ko, maybe something like that. It was taught out of a garage on Long Island by... An Italian-American Korean War vet, where he learned...
What is up with that? My master instructor was also an Italian-American woman who the Korean flag, the Taekwondo flag, the Italian flag were like the big things in the gym.
My Taekwondo instructor literally had USMC, United States Marine Corps, tattooed on both of his knuckles. across both hands. And I thought it was the coolest thing that I had like this tatted up gangster Taekwondo instructor who I think just stayed in Korea after the war and like studied it or something like that. Part of his like origins, like, or that's his lore that he created. But
I see it. I understand. Was he a combat boot instructor? I feel like in Chicago, like near where I was, like there was this Master Jojo in the area there who'd wear his steel toe combat boots. And like part of like drill training was like trying to step on people's toes. And so he weren't fast enough. It was wild. I went to, I think one of his classes is kind of like, hey, I'm around the area. And was not for me.
Well, two things that we want to talk about. So I came up doing it in Long Island, New York, but also specifically, you mentioned you were doing it in the 2000s.
Yeah.
I 90s in the suburbs, like everyone was taking martial arts, like the 80s and 90s, it was exploding as like a suburban thing. And what makes your story even richer is, and this was what hit me, is that you're way younger. You were sort of in it after, like,
it
a lot of
it was not cool when I was doing it.
It wasn't when I was doing it, but it definitely was less cool
but
when you were.
Everyone was doing it. Like, right. I truly, it was like the kind of thing where like we started doing this because like I was raised by a single dad and there were three of us and he was just like, I got to get these kids out of my house doing something. And so we ended up like the local thing was the Taekwondo gym. And so like us and like our like fake cousins all signed up for it. And it was just like, we'd go to school and then we'd go to the gym and we'd be there for like 4 hours and then we'd go home.
And so how old were you at this time when you were?
I was seven when I started.
Wow. Yeah. Cause I started young too. Cause that's like always the thing when people are like, you were a black belt. I was like, by the time I was 17, I was a black belt, but like 13 to 17, it's not like I'm at like my elite karate, Taekwondo performance at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's very tricky. And like the way, like my instructor had a really interesting story. Like she, one, like a woman owning a gym, especially like in our like conservative little town, was like very like weird but cool, and I'm happy that like she was my master instructor for like most of my training. But she was like a really high level competitive athlete, ended up like coming third at I believe trials in like for the Olympics in like somewhere in the 90s, and then like was like, okay, like I'm done. She was like, she already had two kids at the time and was just like, I'm not putting myself through another 4 years of this, and came
so
back and
badass.
Opened a gym. I know, it's incredible.
That's such a cool. Yeah. My instructor, shout out Nick Mena. Nick, I think he even called it Nick Mena Karate, even though he was teaching Taekwondo because it was the 90s. And people's moms would say shit like, well, my son wants to do karate, not Taekwondo. And it's like, just is the same thing. Just sign your kid up. This is what they want to do. It's the same thing. It's not the same thing at all, but it is the same thing as 13-year-olds choosing between Tiger Schulman's and Nick Mena. Like it's not like, you know, you can really test the legitimacy of the three guys who are teaching in Freeport.
Yeah, suburban
New York.
Parents don't know. Like right, white suburban parents aren't like, oh, like let's go check this out. They don't care. They just want you to go do it for a little bit and then be done.
What kicked off getting into martial arts? So it sounded like it was pure, but did your single dad be like, hey, kids, everyone's got to have a fucking hobby. I need you out of the house. And you were like, I'll do Taekwondo. Or was it like, I'm just going to drop all three of you off at Taekwondo. And you rejected it first, into it. It was your idea. Like, give me a little bit of that backstory.
I think looking back on it, like, I am very lucky that I did have the kind of father who was like, we're doing it all. Like, you're getting signed up for a little bit of everything. And Taekwondo was the one that I think for all of us stuck, because it was a family sport, despite the fact my father refused to participate. He was a big fan of like showing up with a coffee at the end of practice.
Vic, you're touching on some really, because me and my brother signed up together, along with like two of our friends and their siblings. And me and my
That's
brother.
That's exactly what happened with us.
And they're not like our fake cousins, but it was like literally my mom's friends' kids who we hung out with all the time. Taekwondo was on Sundays, and so I always like to say, the amount of communion wafers I ate in a karate gi with a New York Giants starter jacket over it is insane. Like, so frequently, me and like my brother and our three friends in full karate gis walking into church every Sunday, because my mom would like rope us in, be like, after karate, I'll get you guys egg sandwiches. And we're like, yes. And she's like, and then we go to church and we're like, no.
Like, truly, what was up with that? Because that was also like a big thing, even when I was doing it, was like wearing the dobok everywhere. Like,
yeah.
Just being in uniform, in full uniform, belt on, and then like going to Dairy Queen afterwards and sitting and eating a meal there. You know what I mean? Like,
I gotta say, part of the reason you sign up as a kid is to put the gi on. Like, and I'm now almost 40, a grown man. I played in a bunch of sports, competed in a bunch of. Putting on any uniform does feel good. Even like, you know, like you start to, when I put on a rugby kit the other day for like, I needed my wife to take a picture of me in my rugby uniform for a thing. So I started putting it on and I put it on and I'm like, oh shit. I started to be like, I'm ready to play. So if I put on a gi right now, I think I would be fucking breaking pine in no time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, there is something where like, it kind of is like Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. Like, if you did anything like that, like, it is sort of like, I don't know, there is a little bit of magic to the uniform. I totally agree. Like, it doesn't matter what other people think, because you got like your group that's all doing it. And like, that's like the fun part of it.
Especially in the 90s, karate gis and ninja costume. Like, I was a ninja for like every Halloween for like, you know, the ages 8 through 16 or something like that.
Well, not only was there Karate Kid, you had three ninjas at that time.
Rocky,
too.
Colt, like, and Tum Tum.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what a time to be alive and to be a martial artist.
I'm one of three boys and we all did martial arts. So it was like three ninjas came out and we actually went to go see Three Ninjas in the theater with my grandpa and they somehow played the second reel of the movie first and then played the second reel again. So me and my brothers were like, it's already so confusing because the movie just opens with them like in the middle of issues. And then it goes for like 20 something minutes and then starts over. And then my grandpa was like, I think something might be wrong. And me and my brothers were like, yeah, we were so excited to watch Three Ninjas Kick Back, the sequel. And this absolutely fucking sucks.
Absolutely wild.
Also on that trip, random tangent, I remember the woman taking the tickets told my grandpa, you're not a senior citizen. You have to pay full price. And he was like, yes, I am. And like took out his ID and had to show his ID. And my grandpa, you know, a little ready to snap at any moment, was like, this fucking bitch, she doesn't ask me how old I am. Why would I lie about being a senior citizen? And we're just like 10, 8, and 4 walking into the movies with him, like, okay, pop.
Oh my God. But also too, like, and maybe this isn't fair, but like, to the ticket taker, why do you care? Like,
just
why?
Give it,
like, come on. Maybe she owned the theater.
Yes. And then, you know what? That makes her even more interesting. She's like, I like to, you know, slum it and do the regular jobs at the theater just to, you know what my employees. Maybe it was an undercover boss.
She undercover bossed herself for her, like, three employees.
She walked in, like, on herself.
Karen, we know it's you.
So the main reason we got into it was because we were into action movies. We were into Chuck Norris, Van Damme, Seagal.
Oh, great.
So that's what kicked off our love for that. And then like in the 90s, when we were kids, there was like a sort of magic to the martial arts. You know, anything Asian in the 80s and 90s was treated like mystical and magical and stuff like that. But for us, it was like, once we learned that you can learn to do that stuff, and then you don't, you know, you have the disconnect of like, Van Damme's not doing that stuff. You can't learn to do what he does. It will take forever. He's an absolute genetic freak and all that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, okay. You learn all that eventually.
Are not a part of the curriculum.
Yes, exactly. It's like, when do I learn parkour? And it's like, get the fuck out of here. Like, because I remember when we started taking Taekwondo, we were like, and then we got to take gymnastics so we could do flips and shit. And it's like, wait, why do we need to do gymnastics?
We went to trampoline every Saturday in the hope that we were going to be able to learn like flips. Like our goal, anytime we go to big tournaments, you know how they have like, did you compete at all?
No, we only had to spar like on our tests, but I never competed at that level. No.
Well, and like anytime you walk into any kind of those competitions, they're all over YouTube if you're like into that sort of thing.
Oh,
like,
I watched a lot of demonstrations. Yes.
All those demos, like you always see like these like 12-year-olds that are like spinning and like running up, like it's like they're running up boards, like breaking them as they like go like up, like. I don't know how to describe it other than they're running.
What you're talking about, to describe exactly what you're talking about, it's like in a video game where you can jump to the wall and jump off. There are people who like do that up three boards, like
yes.
Breaking boards on the way up or back on the way down. And or there's like a pair of 9-year-old twins who are both doing like nunchuck kata, and then there's like an 8-year-old girl who's got like a long wushu spear that she's like whipping around and flipping, and you're like, holy shit. It does feel like in movies growing up, like Wayne's World 2 parodies it with like, and behind this door is a bunch of people doing some elite training, you know. It just feels
yeah, exactly.
And then you're just like a kid over on the edge who's like, I'm gonna spar for points against other 12-year-olds, but there's like two guys doing somersaults with size in their hands and shit.
It's like, it's so, it truly is so wild, because it really puts into perspective immediately like your talent level and your place in the order here. So it's hard to get too big of a head in a sport where there's people that are just always going to be significantly better than you.
How did it feel when you got started? Like, were you into it right away? Were you not into it? Did you have a natural capabilities towards it? Like, is there your athletic capabilities, where they lined up for Taekwondo? Like, what?
So for me, I think this was a perfect storm. And I'm going to say this not to brag, but I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. So it was
You do comedy now and Taekwondo then? Yeah, I know, Vic.
I'm not going to brag, but I was alone a lot. And so like what was kind of a perfect situation was like, you go and it's like a lot of other people that really don't fit in other places. Like, especially at my tiny little Midwest gym, it was like a lot of other, like, there was like these two brothers that had like shaved heads and those like tiny little like
rat tails. Yeah, yeah.
And so like, you know, it was like them. And then, you know, like, and then it was like me and a lot of other boys, which I really loved at the time. And then my siblings, which was the best. And like, we all would just go and hang out with each other. And then especially once we started competing, like I was really just kind of like, oh, we're doing this. And then I think around like green belt is when you're forced to spar at our gym. I know all gyms sort of do the belt system differently, but that would be like our fourth belt in for your test. It's the first time you have to spar. And I actually was like, oh, I love this. I love kicking people. I love hurting people. This is the best.
Was the violence appealing? Was the thrill? Had you done any like other athletic competitions before this? Also, are you in high school as a green belt, or is this like junior high? If you're 7 when you start, are you sparring at 10?
It works like our gym, it takes like, you went through approximately like 3 to 4 belts a year. So you get your black belt in about 3 to 4 years, depending on, there's like one black belt test a year. So if you make the cutoff, you could do it in 3 years. Some people it takes 4 years. So at this point, I'm probably like 9. When I'm starting
and you're competing against other 9-year-olds in point sparring for Taekwondo, right? Is it points or is it?
It's points. So like, they change the system every year. And this is also like a pretty big point of contention, and actually something that like, I think it's like great for a viewer, really, really tough. So the different divisions that they have, they've got like 14 to 17, you can start doing headshots. And They've recently, I don't know if it's still up to date, but they changed a bunch of the point system. So now the most valuable point is spinning kicks to the head, which is like, yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a sport that's really trying to keep up with MMA.
I was about to say, it's like rocking jock. It's like the five pointer from half court. It's like, we don't need to make kids actively doing spin kicks at each other's heads all the time.
In any way, shape, or form. I mean, like, I don't think anybody really needs to be doing it, spinning kicks to anyone's head. It's like the most velocity you can have coming at somebody's head. And I mean, like, I don't know about you, but like, as somebody that's had like concussions from a lot less than that, like, a regular kick to the head is fine. Like, that'll do the job. We don't need it.
When all the new CTE info was coming out, we were like watching a football game and they were talking, maybe it was Real Sports, and they were talking about it. And my wife goes, haven't you had like a lot of concussions? And I was like, yeah, I've had like 8 or 9 or something like that. And she's like, isn't that really bad? I'm like, yeah, it sounds like it was not good for me to have that many concussions. But doing martial arts, street fighting, and playing rugby. That's just something that happens to white trash boys. And in my school, lots of girls. But it happened to a lot of us 16-year-old boys. Especially if any of the bullies at school find out you do karate. Because then they really want to be like, let me see your karate, you little, insert as many homophobic slurs as you can.
Sure. That was always the fun, weird thing. Eh? Like, everybody's like, oh, show me. Like, as soon as they hear about Taekwondo, it doesn't matter if they think it's cool or not. It doesn't matter sort of where you're at. Everybody wants to, like, know what it looks like. And there's no good way to demonstrate that in a setting like that. It's like, tell me a joke.
Isn't it weird that those two things, it's martial arts, comedy, and being a doctor. Those are the only three things that someone actively asks you to do at a party. Like, if you're like, I'm a comedian, they're like, tell me a joke. I do Taekwondo. Oh, let me see a kick. I'm a doctor. Great. My shoulder has been hurting for a week. Do you think it's blank? Can you look at this pus-filled mole on my ass or whatever? And so that's really funny. And it's so true. Like, and the people who go, well, let me see it. You have no idea if they're going to be into it or if they're looking for a way to bully you. And there's just like the only choice you have is like, no, I won't. They're like, you loser. You don't know what you're talking about. It's like, all right, fine. Here's a snapping front kick. And you do it. And they're like, really? You pussy or
that's
whatever
what you do. Yeah. It's like, it's so horrible. It's so not horrible. It's fun. My whole life has been
the things I like most to do are things like you don't want other people to see you do. Like it's so hard being 12 and being like, I like D&D, martial arts, and I cry at movies. And if anyone at school finds this out, I'm a dead man. Okay, they found it out. Here comes 6 years of bullying.
Yeah. It's like, it's all bad. And you'd think the martial arts would help with that. And it really doesn't at all with self-defense or anything like that. Like,
it really doesn't, because you can't, like, if you're 10, no matter how much Taekwondo you know, like, a 10-year-old who's slightly more developed than you is a different species. Like, and that's usually who the bullies are, the people who got bodies before. Like, oh, you have a mustache and we're in 7th grade and now you're throwing me in the toilet. Got it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. And I would say, like, it is one of those things where, like, I also will argue, like, growing up, I did not help myself because I started Taekwondo. And as soon as I got to, like, green belt, like, maybe, like, blue belt, I was like, okay, I'm taking this show on the road. Recess, I'm gonna run my own gym, and I'm gonna like,
you were teaching TKD at school to your friends
at recess to one girl and her little sister who were very into it, until we got discovered in the corner of the playground by a teacher who proceeded to call over a couple of additional students to be like, oh, what's going on here? And that was the end of that.
Oh, teachers can be snitches too. Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it depends on your area, but definitely the teachers at my school were not great. They thought it was hilarious.
The teachers at my school were wildly unsupportive. I tell this story too much on the pod, but my high school football coach, who was also my social studies teacher, called me gay boy for my 4 years of high school. And like, it's... other people called, because of my last name, I was just called that for fucking 4 years.
What?
And it was like a teacher initiated it.
Wild.
He would eventually lose his job as football coach when he took the team to a sleepaway Hell Week camp and hazing went too far and kids sued the school. If I give you my name of my high school and you look up Mepham High School controversy.
Well, I'm writing it down.
Yeah, it's that one. It's not funny at all, but kids were, in hindsight, was called hazing, and kids were sexually assaulted by upperclassmen on the football team. Like,
holy shit.
And in hindsight, what happened to me was clearly sexual assault. Like, you know, but it was like pants being pulled down and ass being slapped and stuff. Like, it escalated in the three years after I left, but just unchecked fucking boys unchecked people in high school. I shouldn't just
clarify. You said he lost his job as the football coach.
I believe he also got fired as a teacher, but I know for a fact I'm safe saying that because the football team was like disbanded for 2 years. Yeah.
Whoa. Good.
Yes.
Good.
Good. And it like that should not be part of it. Like when you zoom out and in hindsight, like you have like intense hazing for like this low level tier shit. It's like, you're a fraternity at a liberal arts college. You're a high school football team that is not even going to the playoffs. Like, you don't need like this level of intensity that you took from Duke lacrosse. Like, we don't need to bring that to fucking kids.
Yeah. So I mean, like, just in general, like, I find that like anytime you got kind of like youth sports like that or like elite sports, and I mean, like, I'm sure it happens in all sports, but I guess like the sports that I've noticed it most was like in martial arts, because I went to like a lot of like I was at the Olympic camp for a couple of summers doing stuff, and like shady shit goes on, and like it's like kids, and like sometimes it's like adults that like don't quite know they're adults yet, like haven't like realized like, oh yeah, like I'm in charge of this situation. And it's just like, it's really like horrible. And I'm very happy like the people, it seems like, are starting to talk more about it, like watching what happened with the gymnastics doctor and all that stuff. Like, it seems like hopefully it's going to be safer for future generations.
It has to be like, it can only be safer for future generations. It's because it's one of those things that in hindsight you're like, oh, maybe the dude who knows Taekwondo the best in our town isn't necessarily the best person to be in charge of kids. Like, this guy knows football. Maybe he doesn't know, like, understand developing 13-year-old boy. Like, it's like just like that weird thing where, like, how now we give all these people these huge platforms where it's like, maybe we don't need to listen to someone whose like background is cosmetics about how to turn the world around. Maybe we don't need to listen to someone who was an Olympiad. They don't need to be the governor.
I don't want to know their plan on infrastructure. I'm like, not interested.
Right. That's like, God forbid we have a few people that have studied the thing. Everyone's got to be an outside the box thinker. It's like, you know, a little thinking inside the box could help us.
Stay in the box 2024. That's what we want. Just like, just keep it normal.
Someone who understands politics, cares about people. We don't need someone who's like, but you don't understand. They come at it with an approach of a Taekwondo instructor. It's like, that's not who you want running the country or anything. Potentially, as we're learning, maybe not even Taekwondo.
probably not even Taekwondo. Like, I think that's totally fine. Like, it's so strange, but like, I genuinely overall, had a really, like, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Like, I genuinely do think that, like, it taught me, like, a lot of discipline. Like, it was an incredible way to, like, work out. And it gave me my only friends that I had for 10 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hard to argue against all those perks there. Yeah.
But, you know, it really, like, I got to travel, like, across the country. So I started getting really competitive, I would say, when I was, like, 11. My sister was also really great, and she's 4 years younger than me. She is somebody that, like, could have been incredible. And just when she turned, like, 14, was like, I'm done. I'm not interested in doing this anymore. And it was the most infuriating thing in the world, because I was good, but I was never great. And she, like, had the ability to be great. And I respect her decision. I think looking back, like, I totally get it. But boy, at the time, was it infuriating. I, 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 I,
In my 30s, in my late 20s and 30s, I became a bit of a wine guy. And I got to say, I'm still a bit of a wine guy. Pairs well with a lot of meals and sometimes a refreshing glass of rosé on a summer day hits wonderfully. And sometimes a little red wine at the end of a day with a little chocolate hits wonderfully. I'm not a big white wine drinker. I understand the place for it and people seem to really like it, but I'm more of a red and rosé kind of guy. And so I was so hyped. I'm not a wine expert. You know, I like to try a bunch of new stuff. That's like the only way I can really learn how I like and what I like and stuff like that. So that's why I use Vivino. It's the world's biggest online wine marketplace. They're also the largest online wine community with 50 million users rating and reviewing just about every wine. Vivino carries all my favorites, but I didn't grab any of my favorites because I took the opportunity to try a bunch of new stuff that I wouldn't normally get. So I got like four different rosés and four different red wines. Finished a couple of the rosés, brought two of the red wines to parties. That's what I like to do with wine as well. It's such a great gift. If they don't open it there, you know, they still get to use it. The Vivino app has everything you need to know about wine. It's right in your hand. You can see all the ratings and reviews. You can leave your own. And of course, you could even buy wine. My favorite thing to do is scan a bottle when I'm shopping in a store and see what Vivino's users say about it and see what price I can get it from on Vivino. So, as a matter of fact, just recording this ad has made me decide I'm going to have some red wine with my dinner tonight. I believe I'm making a little bit of skirt steak, so I'll be checking that out. I've really stepped up my wine game thanks to Vivino. So give them a try, and I know you're going to love it. Go to vivino.com/mighty and use code mighty at checkout to save 20% off your first order of up to $200. That's vivino.com/mighty. Code mighty to save 20% on your first order of up to $200. vivino.com/mighty. Code mighty. See site for details. Terms apply. You know, women have been talking about their bodies for years. Why don't men? I do talk about my body pretty frequently, but it's nice to hear about a podcast where other men are talking about their own bodies, whether it's hairy shoulders, thin calves, skin tags on your biceps, butt fur, foot cheese. I'm just trying to put two words together that kind of gross me out, but are real about bodies. Luckily, you don't have to hear me list anymore because there's a new show I want you to check out called Manatomy. Like anatomy with an M in front of it. Manatomy. Manatomy. Where men talk openly, frankly, and hilariously about their own bodies. Each week, comedian Danny Wallace, author of Yes Man, made into the Jim Carrey film, and magazine vet Phil Hilton welcome stand-ups, athletes, writers, big men, small men, exercising men, cheese-consuming men. It's awkward, intimate, funny, weird, and totally like unlike anything else. It's not a health guide. It's not self-improvement. It's a no-judgments zone. Sounds right in my wheelhouse. It's a story of a life told through the body that's lived it. Check out Manatomy. New episodes available every week on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this one. Give it a listen. Manatomy. I want to talk a little bit more about those Olympic camps, but before that, when did you give it up? When did you stop?
I had my last major fight. So I lost like two really important fights when I was 16, 17. And that's kind of like the age where you're either leveling up or like you're not, like you really decide to give or get out of the way.
Yeah. At minimum, you're a 17 year old person. You're like, do I want to travel around the country and getting kicked in the head because I'm not doing that great at it? Or do I want to like maybe find some, you know, like was that what was on your mind? Or was it like, I don't want to lose anymore? Or were you losing interest?
So listen, this is the most embarrassing thing that I've ever done in my life. And I'm going to tell you this right now in confidence.
Perfect.
I auditioned for a stage production of Stuart Little, the musical. So it was a musical version of the movie Stuart Little that was written, I think, just by somebody in the community. I got the Pogos.
That's not the end of the most embarrassing story ever. Oh my God. I thought that was plenty embarrassing for me.
I got the part of Stuart Little's mom.
Okay. Yeah. It's getting worse.
Who in this musical, I think, is in the show for 10 minutes. I had to make the harrowing decision of, do I go to US Open, of which I've qualified. I've trained a really long time for, it's important. If I want to get to the national team tryouts, I need to be at this fight. Or do I want to go do Steel Beam Theater's production of Stuart Little, the musical? And I picked
the latter.
The latter, unfortunately.
But that sent you more down a correct path than U.S. Open junior nationals or whatever.
Ever could have.
Yeah.
Opened way more doors for me. Honestly, end of the day, I'm not mad at all. Like, my time was done. I was like genuinely like, I'd spent that summer before in Colorado Springs, and I just had like a real epiphany at that camp that like, I'm done. Like I think I'm done with this. And it's just tough because there's like so much riding on it at that point. Like there's so many coaches and.
But you're also you're also at the age where self-awareness is starting to creep in a little bit. And you're like, I'm trying so hard. And these people are, I can actually see the difference in our skill levels. Like we're 16 now, we're 17 now. I always thought, hey, we're all Taekwondo. Like, that's how I always felt. And then, like, you start to, when you become, like, unfortunately aware of, like, oh, no, these people are objectively better than me at this. And I can tell they're not trying. It's not killing them as much to even. So, oh, will I ever be as good as Barry here? And I probably won't. And is that enough of a sign for me at this age to be like, what am I really? Like,
yeah, I would also even argue that like for me, it was like I was looking around at people and going, oh, my God, I don't want it as bad as Barry.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
And I think that that is just as important because like at the camp where I had this epiphany, there was this girl who like, so this was an invitation only camp. It was really like, you know, it was like a high level thing. Like they had people from all over the country there. And there was this girl who was there who I'd never seen before, who was like, my age, my height, looked to be in my weight division. And I was like, I don't know you. I would absolutely know you. Like at this point, like, you know, I'd fight like 9, 10, 11, 12, like big fights every year. And at the tournaments, you see the same people, you fight the same people in your weight division. She looked my age. So like, and I would have been 16 at the time. So the age division is 14 to 17. So I'm like, I would have seen you around. I haven't seen you. So we get like partnered, they were like partnering people up for sparring drills. And I got partnered with this girl and she immediately, like right off the start, back kicks me into the nose. My nose just like breaks immediately.
Ooh.
And it was brutal. And so the instructor, it was Juan Moreno was running the camp. He is a 2-time silver medalist, ran a camp. He was running the, Olympic program for Taekwondo at the time, was like, okay, go take Vic to the nurse. So it's like me and this girl walking to the nurse and she's like, I'm so sorry. I really don't want to fuck this up. Like, this is my opportunity. I had to like beg to come to this camp. And like, I just love this so much. And I really want this to work out. And I'm scared that they're going to send me home. And I'm just like, stop talking to me. But then I'm like by myself for a second. And I genuinely was like, oh my God, like I've never wanted to be here as bad as this girl wants.
Yeah.
To be here. You know what I mean? And I just like really had this like, oh yeah, moment where I'm like, oh yeah, I need to move. Like, I don't want to do this anymore.
And I feel like you're smart enough at that age and know yourself enough to be like, oh, you can recognize that she wants it more. And maybe you never recognized that in yourself previously of like, damn, okay, that is what the coaches are talking about, what the sports movies are talking about, when it's like, you gotta want it, when you're like,
yeah,
I don't like you. I didn't fight tooth and nail to get invited here. You know, like, oh,
absolutely.
Shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I got invited cause I've been here forever. And like, I'm a good fighter who can like, that was my other thing too, is I perpetually got third place. Like that was my only thing. Anytime I'd get up to those medal fights, I'd win cause usually like, I don't know, you have like 5 to 8 fights per round, sort of in my division. It was like a competitive weight division. I'd win like my first two fights, and then I'd get into that one where it's like deciding who goes to the gold silver fight, and I would almost always lose that fight.
Oh man, that's the wheelhouse, the third place.
It was too much pressure going to the gold silver fight. So I would almost always psych myself out in that fight. And then as soon as I got to like, it's the podium or no podium, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm going to get on the podium. That's fine. Like, was like, I could almost always tell if I was going to win a fight before the fight.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Do you have any desire now to get back into it at all?
Every day. It's like, okay, now that I've stopped and I'm not flexible and I can't kick anymore, I'm like, I go into like, anytime I go to like a conference center or like a football field where like anywhere where they used to have it, I'd be like, oh, I want to do something, like get me out there.
Do you ever find yourself doing like, you know, like when you're with your friends and you're like, you just do like a sidekick or something, or you do something where you're like, oh, I still have it a little bit? Because I'm now on my third round of, I eventually got back into martial arts when I lived in New York 10 years ago. I was doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh, cool.
For a little while at Henzo Gracie's. And then I gave that up. That was not for me. I got dominated daily. Never mind. I was about to say, which is for me, but not in BJJ, but we don't have to get into any, like, this is, we don't know each other that well, Vic.
I like that.
This is my problem. Like, don't say that, but you should probably tell them what you told yourself not to say, because that would be more genuine. And I'm like, just never have any of this conversation. You're fine.
No, I'm happy we went back, and thank you for sharing that with me.
But I'm glad, Vic. I had to make sure I got that across. Michaelis, I need you to hear this. But now I'm back in martial arts again. I was doing it before quarantine out here because I'm like I said, my love of martial arts came from the movies. So of course I'm a diehard Bruce Lee head. Of course I've read all the Jeet Kune Do books and all his books. And now I'm studying Jeet Kune Do instructor out here in the park. And I was doing it pre-quarantine in like a big group. Now I'm doing one-on-ones as I get back to feeling safer of being in large groups. But
that's so cool. Is it fun? Like, is it to like,
it's so funny, because it's, I think partially because it's like LA adult classes, and also partially because it's Jeet Kune Do, where there is no forms, there is no like you have to bat, like Bruce didn't want any of that stuff. He kind of like Americanized it for like, this is just how to fight. So it's a little bit like fight camp more than it is about like a dojo. I don't hate that, but like, so, and the skill levels are kind of all over the place, because it's like, it's Saturdays at 10. You know what I mean? It's like, some of these guys are competing in MMA fights using their Jeet Kune Do, and some of them are 300-pound comedians who are like, how do you stand with your right fist forward? Yeah, exactly. That's me, baby. But I'm loving it. And I had one of the junior instructors, guys like younger than me, but a legend. And I'm like, hey, junior instructor, I have a quick question. I know you could absolutely disassemble me with your hands and feet right now, but he was like, oh, you move pretty quick for a big man. And I was just like, that's like the best thing a fat guy can hear, because I am actually agile, I think, from years of sports and martial arts. So like demonstrating that at 300 pounds, I felt like such a fucking king. He was like, and I was like, yes, this is why I do it.
I love that. My compliment, because I had started back up a few years ago, and my big compliment that I got was like, oh, I didn't think that you were going to be able to kick like that. Like, oh, like that was pretty strong. Like, that's always like my favorite thing. Yeah. 'Cause I always go into these places, like my favorite, like weird little thing to do, which is like, who cares? But my favorite thing is to just go in and not say anything and just be like, I'm just going to try out a class. And then people be like, have you done this before? And to me, that's just like, mwah, mwah, mwah. That's all I want, is I want people to ask if I've done this before. So I'd be like, oh yeah, I used to fight a little bit. And then they'd be like, well, come to this class. Though I did have to stop for a while, because I was just getting my ass kicked by like 14-year-old boys, and I couldn't do it anymore. I genuinely couldn't do it anymore. They were so good, and they were snarky.
What about backing off from the fighting part of it? Does that still, or is that the part that appeals to you the most about it?
Because so I think that's the tough thing for me, is like, that is what I love about it. So my thing is kind of like what you're doing, where I'm looking for an adjacent martial art at this point. So yes. Like Wushu, I'm very into, like I've read a lot about and I'd really like to get into. There's just like not a ton of gyms in the area. So that's like where, what I'm looking at right now is I'm looking to get back in a different martial art.
That's literally what happened to me in 2020. I'm going through this ongoing midlife crisis in the last couple of years. And like, I want to do martial arts again. I don't want to do MMA because that's not the culture I'm looking for. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was not for me. I would do Muay Thai. And then I was like, I also want to do something that could potentially be good for TV and movies. I'm literally in that much of a midlife crisis. It's like, maybe I'll be like one of those dudes who's like a henchman in his 40s in movies. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'd love to. So I'm like, oh, I should learn. And then I was listening to Bruce Lee's memoir on audiobook, A Life, and I was like, let me just Google. Like, I live in Los Angeles. I live in Southern California. There's so much shit here. There's so many people moved out here to launch careers as stuntmen, and so many celebrities take martial arts. So I just like typed in, and I was like, at the level, I'm a grown man. I have some money. If there's like a private instructor, I was like, fuck it, I'll find it. And then it's like, we teach in the park 3 days a week. I'm like, the park? Yes. Oh, it's affordable. It's near my house. Holy shit.
Brilliant. I'm truly dying to know. You don't have to say now if you don't want to, but I would love the name of that school.
I'll pass it on to you as soon as we get off mic. I don't want any fucking listeners showing up. I feel like they could Google Jeet Kune Do Los Angeles and find me, but then
don't
they'll
say
have to,
that. They're
they'll have
do
to
that.
Face me. They may find me, but they'll never defeat me.
You're too agile.
Do you find yourself ever like every once in a while, especially when I'm back in class, like I always find myself do like a weird, I like slip into a stance, or like if I'm like walking down a path and there's a tree branch, I like dodge it like a fighter rather than like just move it. And every once in a while I do something like that. And my wife just looks at me like, you fucking goober. How old are you? And why are you now doing sparring stances, you tap me on the back and stuff. I'm like, I can't help it.
It is like simultaneously the biggest part of myself that I don't talk about and the lamest part of myself that like comes out every once in a while. And anytime it does, it's never got the reaction of like, whoa, cool. It's always like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, always.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I used to box a lot. Like that was like my big thing right after I stopped Taekwondo. And I really love boxing, but it is like, it's a tough crossover because if you try to come in, lot of kicking, but it's also like stance wise and like even just like the boxing's like this and you're all like crunched up. Yeah. And like Taekwondo, like a big open like stance and you're kicking where you're like coming in and snapping and they're like, don't do any of that. Like all of that is like, if you were to actually box someone, you would die. Like you would in a recreational fight, you would die.
Yeah. A real boxer. Like, that's the other thing too that I'm realizing, like hitting the pads at Jeet Kune Do, I'm like, oh, you just need punch training more than anything too. Now we're talking about like to actually survive in a fight, but being able to throw a punch, whether you learn it via boxing, Taekwondo, kickboxing, that's the skill that saves you. Like, it's like
a step further than that, having actually punch somebody is helpful.
Having been
punched and kicked, and it's like knowing. So like there was this really crazy thing. I was out like right after UCB. I was walking out of UCB Sunset RIP, and I got punched in the head blindside as I was just like walking to my car. Just a guy like came up next to me, punched me in the head. I didn't see him coming. It's not like a cool story. I didn't like do anything crazy, but it was in the moment afterwards I was like, okay, I need to sit down, I need to look around, I need to see if there's anybody that I can see, and I need to like try and get myself like into the light and closer to the area where I know there's people. And it's like, that is like part of that training.
Like
that is just as important as like being able to like do stuff beforehand, like knowing what to do after and like knowing the experience and being able to like slow your heart rate down. I think it's just as important because you can't control stuff like that. So sometimes it's like knowing how to react.
That's fucking crazy, Vic. I had heard that that happened to a person at the theater, not realizing. I mean, I don't think I knew you at the time.
Oh, that was me. One martial artist at the theater. The one person that maybe could have done something. And it was me. And well, I did get being
blind, you can be a fucking karate master, but being blindsided is being blindsided. As a matter of fact, not that we're supposed to be giving fight advice, but... My anecdotal amateur fist fighting advice I give everyone is frequently throwing the first punch wins the fight. And that's a hard bridge to cross, is to be the person that throws the first punch. But if you want to win a fight, you kind of got to throw that first punch.
Yeah, people always say, don't be the one to start it, be the one to finish. And I'm like, yeah, but if you want to be the one to finish it, sometimes it is helpful to have the element of surprise and be the one to start it in the first place.
You're definitely more likely to win a fight if you hit them and they don't hit you. Like, that's definitely better in the long. That's objectively a better thing.
I think that's good fight advice. I feel good about that. I feel good telling people that.
I meant to say earlier, and it just came back to me as I'm giving fight advice. It triggered me because that's like what my dad did my whole life, because he was like a high school dropout, like trashy, like we fight other gangs of kids kind of guy. But then... he, after picking me and my brothers up at Taekwondo every Sunday and watching the tail end of it, and then seeing that there was an adult class that started after, my dad was eventually like, see what this is all about. And he joined the same Taekwondo school, the adult class. And me and my brothers were in the kid class. And then he stuck with it longer than us. We all quit after getting our black belts, which we beat our dad to black belt. Then he got his black belt. Then he stayed for another 3 years and got his second, or 2 years and got his second degree black belt test.
No way.
And I gotta say, it's a really interesting vibe going to your father's black belt test when you're like old enough and also do the sport, so you kind of know what's going to happen. And I got to watch my dad's on his second degree black belt test. He sparred two guys from the school, like they were like 2v1. But my dad, in addition to
2v1,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, because it was like first degree black belt test. You got to spar. Like, I mean, you have to spar on all of your tests, but like at the black belt test, you have to spar one a higher level student for an extended period of time.
After this, we got to talk about black belt tests, because I think that like that's a level of pageantry that I think people don't realize goes into.
Oh yeah, and I got to let's talk about our black belt. Watching my dad fight 1v2. So my dad, in addition to being eventually a decent martial artist, he was also like a scumbag, but he was also 6'5", 250 pounds. So he's like a big dude. And watching him fight two second degree black belt kid, like the high level students from the school, and like seeing my dad grab a guy by his chest pad and just throw him to the ground completely illegally. But like in the Long Island Taekwondo world, people are like, excellent, good work. Like, cheating always wins, you know. Like, that's
the
kind
of thing to guard the chest pad.
Yeah, you gotta protect yourself. That's really so you mentioned the pageantry of a black belt test. Maybe like my earliest performance in life, and now as a professional performer, my earliest performance might have been at an Elks Lodge in Baldwin, Long Island, where I did, under the yellow cigarette stained walls and ceiling, I did my katas. I broke my first brick at my black belt test, my first concrete. I fucking sparred all in front of my mom and my high school girlfriend.
You invited her?
Yeah, we were, I was very proud. And
as you should have been. I think a lot of people give you a hard time for that. I'm happy you invited her, because it's a big deal and you worked hard for it. And
in hindsight, it must have looked so insane to like see your high school boyfriend when all that matters in high school is being cool, and your boyfriend is in like white pants going like, Tagu won! You know, and it's like, oh, I fucking hate this guy. We didn't last, but I don't think it was because of karate.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
What was your black belt test like?
So like it's funny because I think everybody's kind of got their own little flavor that they put on it. For first degree, you had like, you got to pick a bunch of different breaks. That was my favorite part. You got to spar, and then you had to read an essay that you wrote into the microphone, which I would say is probably my first performance that I did, was I had to write what black belt means to me. And we also did you put sayings on your belt? Like, we all had like our name, and then in Korean we had like we got to pick like a black belt phrase, and that like followed you.
Oh, cool. No, that sounds more in my wheelhouse. We had to do two forms that we masked, like we practiced a lot, two of like the 20 that you learn over the course of this specific school. And right. then you had to do two that they just threw out at you.
We had something similar to that where, yeah, it was like you got to, you had, we had to do, I think, like our red belt form. And then we did choreo for the first time once. So you had to learn choreo beforehand. And then we did choreo, which is like the black belt form.
Cool.
As soon as we all put on our black belts, that was like the thing that everybody did. We did the brick break as well. But then for your second degree, which was my favorite part, we had self-defense sketches that you had to like write and choreograph, and you had costume changes, and you would like have a script that you would go by.
To see the two worlds of Vic applying there. All of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, you know, I was thinking about playing Stuart Little's mom, and I could just do a little costume change.
We'll do a little costume change. Yeah, Stuart Little's mom ended up breaking a brick.
Hell yeah.
It was just like, it was so wild, and it made no sense, and people were very, very into it. Like, my sister was in gymnastics at the time, so she could do flips and stuff like that. So she, for her second degree black belt test a year after mine, added a back handspring into hers, and our instructor, Miss Vicky, made her do that like sketch that she wrote, that self-defense sketch, at every single event for the rest of the year. Like any gym gathering, anything, like any party at anyone's house that we would do, Hannah would have to do that like self-defense sketch.
Oh, that's awesome. Speaking of at every black belt test for our school, like the right-hand man of the teacher, this dude named, everybody has, by the way, anyone at that trained at the school was all the most Ginzo names. It's like Joey, Nikki, Tommy, Ronnie, is that's like the Sensei Joey, you know? And it's like Sensei Joey at my dad's black belt test and my black belt test and the other black belt tests you would go to, he did a form, kama form, you know, those like little sickle weapons. He would do,
yes.
He would do a form with those set to Annie, Are You Okay? And it was like, to kids, it was like the coolest thing at the time. It was like, he plays music during his form, which I guess is, we're calling choreo too.
Oh no.
But it was like, Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie? And he's like, you doing like, and it's just so awesome. And I'm like, that's for me, as I'm coming into the love of Taekwondo and martial arts via movies, and watching a dude use bladed weapons set to music is like, I'm watching a scene from a movie, and I could not have been more hyped. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. But, and like, even thinking about it now, it's like, I have secondhand embarrassment, but also I have to see it. Like I would tomorrow would like, if the gym was like, I'm doing a test, I'd go watch, I think probably.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm very excited to get back. The other cool thing about Jeet Kune Do is everyone's different skill levels there. So like, I'm over in the corner with like the three other like guys who haven't thrown a punch in forever. And we're like, oh, okay. And then on the other side is like a 60-year-old man with a bow staff and jeans, and he's doing something. And then over here is like three guys demonstrating how to get out of chokeholds. And it feels like a dream come true, where it's like, weapons are out, there's like a heavy peep, there's all kinds of bags and shit, and it's just in the park and everyone's doing different stuff. It feels so fucking rad. I want
to
get good at it
to the park.
Yeah, these guys just back
just
fucking
bring it in
trucks
like a truck?
Up. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
My Sifu was like, I'm going to get I think I'm getting a trailer so I can start bringing like a heavy bag on a stand and we could just wheel it right into the park. I'm like, yeah, man, go for it. I pay you enough in one-on-one classes that you should be able to afford to.
Yeah, get that truck.
I've and also in the quarantine, one more martial arts thing.
Please.
Was like, I have Filipino fighting sticks, including padded training ones. And I've been doing like YouTube videos, like right where you're sitting, right where you're watching me. I'd be like standing here with my foam padded sticks.
So cool.
Yeah. It's just like, I just hit myself in the nuts on the first try.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Thank you. Thank you. Protect me.
I recently, like, I'm waiting for it to come in. I got a bo staff because I was just like, it's fun. And like, there's no room for it in my place. I'm not going to be able to practice with it, except probably in a park. And it's the kind of thing where like, I so badly want to be the person that like, doesn't care and is just going to like go and be like, yeah, I just want to practice this for a little bit. But it does immediately bring me back to like being at recess and the teacher being like, come look at these idiots.
Well, I got news for you, Vic. Adulthood is not like high school, and Los Angeles is not like anywhere else in the world. If you walked to the park with a bo staff in a full uniform, you'd be the eighth weirdest person in the park.
I want to get yelled at by the slackliners is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I don't want them yelling at me.
Well, there's a hierarchy there, and the slackliners and the a cappella groups are going to have to learn that they are actually below bo staff training.
But they got those dough bucks on every day. They don't know. They don't know that they're the bottom.
My dad, by the way, still in my mom's basement. He's been dead for 10 years now, but there's still a bo staff, all his belts, a wooden sword mounted on the wall. And then he also has one of those like Makiwara hand toughening boards, like where you would like punch to like make your hand stronger. It's just like a little pad and it was on a support beam in the basement of the house. And my dad would like punch it every morning and it would like kind of shake the house. And all my friends thought it was the coolest thing. And then me and my brothers were like, so fucking annoying. He just wants to show off that he's like awake and exercising.
Oh, that's so funny. And I hate to break it to him. It's now required that you've got like gloves for Taekwondo. So it's like, you don't even need the hands anymore. You don't even need it. Hand and foot pads are now required, unfortunately.
You never have time to put pads on in a street fight, Johnny. That's something like that. My dad would have said. Aim for the biggest guy. There's no rules. Hit him right in the dick, the eyes, the throat, whatever it takes.
Okay, that's smart.
He's not wrong. I will, despite his advice, get my ass kicked a number of times throughout my life. But it was good advice. Whether I truly harnessed it or not, that remains to be seen.
Now, this is maybe like something that like, because, you know, if you don't want to give street fight advice to people, I think that's fine. But like, what's the thing that you have found that's helped you the most, like from training in like actual practicality situations? So I used to work at I worked at a thing called Women to Women, which was a self-defense thing that my martial arts instructor like peddled out to different companies and schools and things like that. And she would get paid. And we got a pair of Harley Davidson steel toe biker boots. And that was our payment for a season of doing this.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Child labor laws, exploitation.
Yeah. But you know, it was fine. We like the boots were ugly, but I wore them once. So it was all worth it. But she would always like talk about like biggest things to do in practical fights. But I don't think she'd ever been in a practical fight. Like I can count like on very few times, like the number of times I've been in like physical fights. Like, so what is the things that you're like, oh, that's what you got to do.
Definitely like I was at a pool party with kids at it this past weekend, over Labor Day weekend or Memorial Day weekend, whenever that was. And I don't have kids. I am kind of a hard R rating in life. So I have to like adjust frequently, but I was talking to like my friend's kids. They were like 10 and 12 and they were like, they were talking about scars and I'm like, I only have scars on my hands a lot and my head, but they're mostly on my hands. Yeah.
I don't know if you can see this. I got like two, I got like a bunch around my knuckles and I got like a bunch on the top of my hand and that's
same.
It.
And that's from martial arts. And then also from bartending, like reaching into places. And then there's like, you scrape your knuckles or hit a piece of glass. So these kids are like, bartending. Did you see a lot of bar fights? I was like, oh yeah. And I'm like, they were like, were they cool? I'm like, no, they're scary. And like, I feel like the best advice a young person can learn about best practical advice is they're absolutely terrifying. So if your fucking heart is in your throat, if your piss is in your pants, like you are not wrong. It's terrifying. Your body reacts in a way that you're not prepared for, like that it hasn't reacted like previously. So a real fight hits, but that's why practicing sparring and getting hit in the face is the best practice you can have, because
yeah,
you know it's going to suck to get hit in the face, but you know it's not the end of the world if you get hit in the face. You know what it feels like if you hit them. Probably it could be, right? To be fair. But the main thing I learned is like, the most important thing is like finding that distance. Whatever your distance is like, that's what you need to maintain. Like if you're a close up person, get close up to this person. Don't punch. If they seem like they're a wrestler, stay away and throw kicks and punches. But mostly get out of fights.
I was going to say that is like, cause I also worked like my big job up until like very recently was I was a brand ambassador. So like, I was like, I worked for like Red Bull and Bacardi and I spent a lot of times at clubs. I was like around a lot of like fights, like you were saying at like weird, like scuzzy, like clubs and stuff like that. And my number one thing that I always tell people is like, the best thing that I took from martial arts for practical life is my ability to run faster than pretty much anybody else. Like my endurance and being able to like just get out of a situation. And also like knowing something's about to go down. Like if you can like read the room and be like, oh, this doesn't seem great. Just like get out of there. You don't need to be there. Yeah. Go.
I will say my years of bartending have given me a very like Sherlock Holmesian like ability to read body language. Exclusively if it's going to lead to fighting or fucking. Like I have
fascinating.
Just from years of being behind the bar at like trashy college level bars, I could just tell by body language and energy. I'm like, fight's brewing over here. These girls are going to kiss over here, or these dudes are going to hook up for sure over here. It's like you could just feel it, and feeling that the energy is a little heightened. And then all this talk we're talking about martial arts. We're leaving out like mixed martial arts, which are now probably one of the most popular sports in America.
Oh, and yeah.
And unfortunately for people in random street fights, a lot of people are now trained fighters in some way.
You have no way to know.
And it only takes, and this is how you find out the hard way. Say you're like me, a big 6'2", 250-pound college kid. And you get fucking worked by a 5'8", 140-pound college kid because he knows jiu-jitsu.
Oh, like, no.
It's brutal. Yeah, it's like,
and not all martial arts are equal. Like, you're getting in a street fight. Like, I want to be behind, like, the Muay Thai, the jiu-jitsu guys. Like, the boxers. Like, that's who I'm standing behind. Like, my pretty little, like, okay, there's a point, and now we're taking a break for 2 minutes. Like, you don't want me. Like, people are always like, if we get in a fight, we want Vic. I'm like, you do not want me anywhere near your fight.
No, crane stance will not help us at all.
Get us points, but that is nothing else.
I want a giant person who can box and take hits. They can go first. Yeah. It's so, and that's the scariest thing. Like, talking to bouncers and shit, it's like any one of these little people, like it used to just be like, all right, move them out of the way. But now everyone's got training. Everyone's got leverage. They can grab your wrist and bend it. All that shit that just sucks. So be careful out there. Although, are we all running in situations where fights are imminent? I mean, I guess they can happen anywhere, anytime. Shit breaks down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's true. I guess this would be for like younger people that are like, what do I do in a fight?
Yeah.
No, don't fight.
Don't fight. Avoid it at all costs.
Do you got video games?
Vic, I want you to get back into martial arts. I feel like, well, you know what? You're also younger than me. You have plenty of time to realize.
I want you too. Even talking about it like this is just like exciting. It's like very much like, I don't know. Like I always feel called to it. Like anytime I go anywhere new, like my first thought is like, oh, I should go find a Taekwondo gym. And I have like my Dan certificates from South Korea. So like my black belt, like
translates.
Like
it's my credits transfer, my TKD creds.
That's so I can really theoretically like go and teach at other schools. Not that I would want to do that, but like I can do that. But I think kind of like we were talking about earlier, my Taekwondo days might be over, but like I am actively looking for another martial art. Here.
Yeah. Also just like as an adult, you're like, it's fun to have an exercise, quote unquote, exercise class you want to go to, like where it's like, oh, I accidentally get fitness, but really I'm just so jazzed because I'm getting to throw punches and stuff.
Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
And here's the highlight of Jeet Kune Do for me. You have to learn right lead and left lead because Bruce's belief was, why would you put your more powerful weapon further away from your opponent? So I'm learning all right hand forward as a righty. I'm fighting southpaw and I'm learning the jab with my right arm, which is just such a weird
Love that. Because also, so smart, of course. Like, I'm left leg back because for the exact same reason. Like, my instructor was big on, like, if my right leg's my stronger leg, that being, because I was always the heaviest person in my weight division. Like, I was borderline weight division. So, like, I was always the one in trash bags when we'd find out that there was only four girls in the division above me. And I'd be like, okay, great. Like, fantastic. I'm going to eat a pizza and then we'll go to weigh in again. But it was like, it genuinely, like, I don't know, like that's very exciting. Like,
and it feels unusual, and then you get used to it. And so, and this is the exciting thing about Jeet Kune Do. Another exciting thing for me is Bruce built it around like, Kung Fu, boxing, fencing, and cha-cha. So fencing is why it's right arm forward, and it's kind of like you want your strongest weapon out there, keeping
right
the keeping the person away from you, and you sort of are lined up like this. And then cha-cha, he was Bruce originally learned about the United States, or like saw the United States, by touring as the Hong Kong cha-cha champion.
No,
because he was a really good dancer and he learned the cha-cha.
And that now, doesn't surprise me at all to hear, actually. Like, it is shocking to hear, but it's not surprising.
Exactly. And then when you learn Jeet Kune Do, you learn a lot of the moves all generate like power from the hips. And like most martial arts, you get a lot of power from the hips. But when you find yourself just doing the hip move that would lead to the punch or the kick, you realize you're doing the cha-cha. Whipping your hips back and forth to get power. And it's like, oh shit, that's where Bruce got that from. And it's so fun to just... And now that I'm like a grown up I have more intellectual capacity and arguably curiosity, like it's such a fun thing for me to like pull these, like now I'm learning not just the moves, but like on another level that I would not have when I was fucking 16 or 15. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh man, that's so cool. That's really, really cool. And it's like, it's also so exciting that like martial arts are always so old. Like all my grandmasters, like, are from South Korea and like are, you know, like came to the States and are like on the board. And so it's like very cool for like a martial art that's like so young too.
Yes.
And
yes. Like, that's what's thrilling. Like my instructor learned from the person who learned from Bruce. It's only like second generation because of like, it's
so
such a modern
cool.
form. Yeah. And it was founded in America, more or less, even though he is like a Chinese. I mean, he is a Chinese American, he is biracial, but it's an American martial art form because he like taught it here. And the other exciting things about Bruce, I'm just rambling because now I'm just giddy and have someone who might give a shit. Big time pothead. And
no way.
Big time pothead. He learned about pot and it, like as someone who alcohol didn't agree with him. And he's like, Steve McQueen, I think, gave him his first joint and he loved it.
Of course he did.
And that's such a cool, right? And then also Bruce got into a lot of hot water with the martial arts communities in America because he taught to black people in San Francisco. He taught anyone who wanted to sign up. And he was the first person that taught like African American, black people back in the day. And other people, like the elders of different martial arts forms, were not cool with that. And he said, no, this is for everybody. Like, you know, you want to learn? I'll teach. Like,
man, that is fascinating. I had no idea. I've always been such a big Bruce fan. Like,
same. Such
like,
a fucking
man,
cool dude.
That's so cool. And I don't know nearly enough about like him as a person. Like this is maybe so interesting. Like not only like it's Jeet Kune Do, you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not only that, but also like, I don't know, just like picking up a biography.
Yeah. I highly recommend his memoir called A Life. It's poorly written. Like it's not that well written, but it doesn't have to be for Bruce. Doesn't have to be for Bruce Lee's life. His Wikipedia is tight. You know what I mean? Like it's cool to read his wiki. And it's just like because he just had that kind of like short action-packed life where he did so much and lived like such a crazy life. But that enough about Bruce. Let's get back to Vic. Vic, where can listeners of High and Mighty find you? I mean, besides in your dojo when they have to challenge you for superiority of the SoCal martial arts
community.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm at VICMMIC across all platforms. And if I could just say, it's Pride Month. There's a lot of really awful anti-trans bills going around. You can find info on that at the ACLU. They're suing a bunch of people. And, you know, just in general, you can find like links to petitions and things like that on their Instagram and website.
Fuck yeah. Co-sign that. not going to plug my action movie podcast after that.
No.
I'd rather prioritize that. Let's do it. I have 500 episodes of this podcast to talk about my shit. But yeah, a lot of fucking subterranean moves are happening in politics around the country, and it feels like we have to push back against the fucking flood of this bullshit that's coming up. Like, so let's keep our eyes peeled for this. Let's stop that all the fucking anti-trans legislation. Let's stop all the anti-voting legislation, because it's starting to feel like an obvious power grab. Let's fucking put an end to it. It's bullshit. Who gives a shit what people's want to call themselves, what gender they want to be? It shouldn't be any of our, I don't give a fuck what anyone does in their lives. No one else should. It's really, at minimum, you should actually just feel empathy and feel care and hope the best for people. Yeah. But at minimum, all you have to do is not think about them at all. Like,
honestly,
such an easy ask is just drop it. Like, whenever someone's like, well, are we supposed to put our pronouns on our resume? I'm like, yes or no. And if so, why are you complaining about it right now? Like, it doesn't fucking matter. Just do the thing. I'm worked up about it.
No,
I'm clearly bringing
it up. I think
it's
good, because with pronouns too, I genuinely do think it's the kind of thing, like, if you really talk to anybody one-on-one, it's like, it's something that will not impact you at all, but will, like, make a person's, like, day or week, or, like, affect, like, how everything goes. So, like, why does it then, like, if you think about it in terms of that, like, why does it matter to you? Like, just do it. Just do it.
But that's, like,
it doesn't affect you at all.
The first person that ever straight up said to me, it's like, yeah, but now we're supposed to call them a different pronoun because they're announcing that they're a woman now. And I was like, you have a stage name. Like, the person that was talking to me was like, they're a TV writer that didn't go by their Jewish last name, but went by, like, a cool, hip-sounding middle name as their last name. And I was like, you can probably unpack who this is using your clue. But I was just like, bro, that's the same exact thing. If you want, like, if I need to intellectualize this for you, it's the same thing as saying, like, please don't call me Jonathan, call me John. Like, because that's the name I prefer. No one would be like, your birth certificate says Jonathan, so you are Jonathan. I'm so tired of people trying to change the God-given name. And it's like, no, call me John. No, call me they. No, I'm a woman now. It's really not that fucking hard.
No.
And I have slipped up with friends, and no one has ever, like, put me on trial.
Somebody will correct you, say thank you, and move on. That genuinely is it.
Well, it's just like fucking up someone's name. You're like, it's actually Michaelis. And you're like, got it. And you're like, not offended that I had to double check or anything like that.
Well, I was offended, but that's you. I was pretty mad.
You're sort of not as chill as you come across.
I'm unapproachable, and that's kind of my thing.
Absolutely unapproachable. That's the vibe you've put out for the last hour or so.
Well, that's what I'm trying to. I want people to know, don't talk to me, don't look at me, don't perceive me. And then, but last but not least, I really just want to plug your action podcast.
Thank you. Most important thing. And now that we've solved all of that, let's listen to Action Boys on Patreon, but you can also get free episodes wherever they are. Vic, thank you so much for coming on. I have Jeet Kune Do in the morning tomorrow, and I'm thrilled. I'm so hyped for it now.
How spectacular. I can't wait to look it up. Thank you so much for having me. This was a freaking blast.
This was so rad for me too, Vic. I appreciate it. And bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy, I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now, somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Well, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, bam, bam. Bam, bam, bam. Bam, bam, bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators. We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it. Do it.
Come on.
Do it now.